Morning, everyone. It is November 2nd, 2022. It is 10:04. There's a quorum present. We're going to call this meeting to order. You can all join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yes.
Sure. Let me note for the record that all the commissioners are present today, two in person and one on Zoom. Bringing us to item number three on today's agenda, which is discussion for possible action, consideration and possible approval of the agenda for November 2, 2022. I'm going to start with Commissioner Gilman. Do you have any questions or comments about today's agenda, sir?
No questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Lance. Vice Chairman Mitchell, any questions or comments?
I don't have any questions about the agenda.
All right. Is there any public comment regarding today's agenda or any items on the agenda? Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, I move to approve today's agenda as presented.
I'll second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to item number four is today's consent agenda. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments about today's consent agenda?
Nothing, thank you.
All right, Vice Chairman Mitchell, anything?
I have just one, and I don't know if it's worth, it's on sub item number two. I don't know if it's worth pulling that off. It's more procedural. I was just curious why it's called out individually. I didn't see anything in the staff report that explained why it's not just on the list like everything else.
Good question. Manager,
what item are you talking about?
In the consent agenda, the first reading of approval for home-based business license for Wakefield CMR LLC. It's just listed separate from the other list of first readings of business licenses. And so my guess would be that it's some sort of a special case privilege license something, but I was not able to determine from reading the agenda item what the purpose for calling it out individually was.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. I'd say at this point, I mean, the sheriff is here. I'm not seeing anything that would be under a sheriff's office liquor board item if it was a special item. What we can do is just first reading, I believe. I can follow up with community development before a second reading just to make sure. Otherwise, it may just be how it's set up, but not any reason that it's specified separately. It is just a home-based business, and I can check into that.
Okay, I'm fine with that. And maybe if in the future, if there is some reason to put it out there, just to include that in the staff report so that
absolutely,
so we know why it's being called out individually. Thank you. I'm good with the consent agenda.
All right, appreciate it for pointing that out. Is there any public comment regarding today's consent agenda? Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, I move to approve today's consent agenda as presented.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Moving on to item number five is public comment. Public comment will be allowed at the beginning and end of each meeting. This comment should be limited to matters not on today's calendar agenda. Public comment will be allowed after each item on the agenda. These comments should be limited to the agendized topic. With that said, is there any public comment today? Morning, Nicole.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Oops, there are no ladies. My name is Nicole Bard, for the record. I'm here to represent also Mary Lou Wilson, who is with me in the gallery, and Larry Huddleston, who hopefully is on Zoom. We have recently been made aware of some information about Stericycle's material handling process that concerns us as Story County residents. We have content experts who have told us that the fly ash and bottom ash, which is the residual from burning the waste at Stericycle, is extremely hazardous. Specifically, all the pollutants identified in the stack gas emissions will also be present and concentrated in the fly ash residue. Any unreacted or partially reacted pharmaceuticals, trace chemo agents, partially combusted plastics and their byproducts, as well as polyaromatic hydrocarbons will be in that solid waste. When we received the Stericycle, when we reviewed the Stericycle SUP documents from the Planning Commission meeting, as well as the NDEP document that is available online, we found that there's no mention as to the hazardous nature of the ash residue. And so we decided to ask some questions. In both documents, Stericycle does mention dealing with ash residue char by quenching it in water, storing it suspended in water, and then disposing of it in a landfill. Our concern is with the handling, storing, and disposal of hazardous residue, especially the potential for leakage into the ground and into our common water source. It is our understanding that when bottom ash or char comes out of the incinerator, it is placed into a water bath for cooling and then retrieved for disposal using some automated device. We are concerned about where that cooling water goes when evaporated or emptied. We are especially concerned about the overflows, cracks in the containment vessels, and possible leaching into the ground. And speaking with NDEP, who were kind enough to answer our preliminary questions about Stericycle, they state that while their air quality permit was approved, the solids permit is currently under review and not yet approved. They also confirmed that the ash and residual can be toxic. While their answers are fairly complete and they seem to be, but they seem to be from the Stericycle application, there's still no mention of the use of water in the process from Stericycle. NDEP's response specifies that the ash residue can only be disposed of in a landfill that takes hazardous materials. In calling Stericycle directly, they downplayed the ash as, quote, it's like what you have in your fireplace, unquote. Based on what we know to be true and what's also in the NDEP documents, we know that this isn't true and that this is a disturbing answer. Additionally, the Stericycle contact said that they would put the ash residue, they do put the ash residue in water that evaporates and then they refill it to keep it filled. This contact also stated that they thought that they would be using the Lockwood landfill to dispose of the potentially toxic ash. We asked for more detail from the Stericycle representative and we're waiting for a call back. Our conversations with the Lockwood Waste Management indicate that they are not a hazardous waste site. They were not aware of the potential toxicity of the ash residue and char and that they would not accept it if it is a toxic material. Hopefully the county building inspectors are working with NDEP on the unique building requirements for both air and water. We assume that the TRI-GID understands what measures to put into place to mitigate any of the three potential pollutant streams, such as residue fly ash and the direct stack emissions, including particulates, if they happen to make their way into the sewer system and the environment. We will be sending follow-up questions to NDEP regarding the use of water in the process, to the safeguards that will be in place to ensure that there are no spills and requesting that they tell us the specifics of the monitoring plan for Stericycle, specifically how much is self-reporting and what the testing frequency is. NDEP will be taking public comments during the permitting process for solids, and we'll also be attending those meetings. We're just here to give you a heads up as to our activities and our concerns. I'll give you a copy of what I just read, and I'm also attaching to it an air analysis that is required, or an analysis that will look like what I'm going to hand you of what a landfill requires if you're going to want to dump things in their landfill. But it's also whatever's in the air is going to be in that ash will be in that water. So you can assume that if there's overflow in the factory of water and it goes down the sewer, it's going to make its way to the TRI-GID. I'm also including for you the exact responses that we got from NDEP.
Appreciate your comments. Cool. Thank you very much.
You don't expect a response. You have any questions?
I don't have any questions at the moment. Commissioner Mitchell, anything?
No. Thank you for sharing this.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So.
concerning public comment? Any other public comment today? All right, not seeing any other public comment, we're going to move on to item number 6, which is discussion only. No action, no public comment will be taken. These are committee and staff reports. We're going to start off with the Sheriff's Office today.
Nothing at this time.
Thank you, Sheriff. Moving right along to the Fire Department, Chief Longcar.
Commissioners, Jeremy Longcar for the record. Just a couple of quick updates. As of yesterday, we started issuing burn permits. We generally run those through March. They are free of charge. However, I want to remind people that we do not allow for open burning in the Virginia City Highlands or in Virginia City proper. Other than that, they can call up the fire station, get a permit, and they are free and available 7 days a week. And I'll take any questions if you have any.
Wonderful, Chief. Thank you. I'll go to Commissioner Gilman first. Commissioner Gilman, you have any questions for the fire chief today? You're on mute, sir.
No questions. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Vice Chairman Mitchell?
So, Chief, is the preferred method of getting rid of fuels for the Highlands and Virginia City to haul those away as the programs?
It is. And those are our two heaviest users of our U-Call We Haul trailers. So I just want to remind the public, too, that even though you don't have the option to burn it, please take advantage of those programs we already have in place. And we do have a landfill down here that is specifically just for vegetation, and we'll go ahead and dispose of it there for them.
Great. Thank you so much.
Chief, another question I have is, you didn't mention Lockwood, unless I missed that. There's no burning in Rainbow Bend or Lockwood.
So within Rainbow Bend, and I believe there might be some HOA requirements for there. We traditionally haven't had anyone apply for down there other than agricultural permits down on the River District.
Gotcha.
But within the trailer park itself in the residential area, no, we do not allow it there as well. So right. Thank you for bringing that up, Commissioner.
Thank you for the clarification. Appreciate the update.
Thank you.
Moving right along to Public Works Department, Director Wersbicki. Thank you, Jason. How about Projects Coordinator, Mike Northan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Northan, Operations Projects Coordinator. A couple items just to update the board on. Number one is work is continuing on the Station 72 building on the Highlands, the fire apparatus building. We're working through the submittals to get the metal building components ordered as soon as possible. We are, as far as the site work goes, we are watching the weather and adjusting work schedules accordingly. Item two is planning for on the Lockwood Community Center is moving forward. We had three draft concept plans presented on the 21st. Project team selected the best option, along with some tweaks and some comments to be incorporated. Next steps will be a presentation of the final concept plan, which will incorporate the most recent comments and directives from the project team. That'll move right into schematic design and then into design development and construction documents. That's all I have today, sirs.
Thank you, Mike. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Mike?
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chairman.
No, thank you.
All right. Thanks again for that report, Mike. Moving right along to Story County Communications, Becky Parsons.
Good morning. Nothing to report.
Thank you, Becky. How about our business development director / emergency management manager, Laura Mather?
Good morning, Laura Mather, for the record. I just have two quick updates, which I realize is rare for me. With regard to emergency management, as we've talked about in previous meetings, we are still working with the Desert Research Institute and the Wildland Fire Smoke Sensors. Apparently, the sensors that we have, and one of the things that I talked about is Story County is kind of the guinea pig in this process. So DRI is using the sensors that they've installed here in Story County as testers. And so they're figuring out this whole process. So turns out that the sensors can't integrate with the EPA's website, which is where that data will be housed. So the Desert Research Institute is working on getting that straightened out. But what their plan is to somehow house that data in a different source so that it can be accessible to the public. So they're keeping us updated on how that process is going with those sensors. So I'm really looking forward to having access to that information. And so as soon as they are able to get that data housed in on a source that they can access, make it public, I'll definitely let everybody know. Hopefully by next summer when the fires are coming through again. With regard to business development, after the last commissioner's meeting, I headed down to Carson City for the small business development fair, information fair, sorry, resource fair. That was really an educational experience, learning about all of the resources that are not only out there for small businesses, but employee resources. I've also met, as we've talked about in the past, with all of the various technical schools that we have around. So I've really developed a network of resources, again, for small businesses, large businesses, but also employees and workforce development. So I'm gathering all that information and I'm creating a web page that'll be on the county's website, and it'll have links to all of these various entities, organizations ranging from state to nonprofit, so that businesses and community members can just go to this one page, look for a particular interest or concern that they have, and have a link right to that. So I'm just about ready to turn that over to IT. And that's the end of my report.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Mr. Goodman, do you have any questions for Laura?
No question. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you. Vice Chairman Mitchell?
No, thank you.
All right. Thank you again. Moving right along to community relations. Honey.
Good morning. Honey Menifee for the record. I just want to remind everyone that November 7th, starting next Monday through Veterans Day on November 11th, we are supporting the Operation Green Lights for Veterans, and that if any business or resident wants to either place green lights or candles in their windows or light up the outside of the building, this will just let any veterans know that they are remembered and supported during next week, and then hopefully that remembrance will, you know, give them a little boost and carry them through some times. Secondly, and I know Stacy York will talk about this in her report, but we are having the resource fair for the county next week on November 9th at the Mark Twain Center. And I just wanna thank all the Public Works, Fleet Services, and the Fire District for all the help that they are doing in getting the community center cleaned out and made available for that fair that we are gonna be having. So that is the end of my report.
Thank you for the report, honey. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for honey?
No questions. Thanks, honey.
Thank you. Vice Chairman Mitchell?
The resource fair, is it, while it's being hosted in Mark Twain, is it for countywide?
Yes, it's countywide.
Thank you.
And we will be having vendors like Lyon County Human Services will be there, because I know, you know, maybe members of Dayton would want to come as well. And then also Quad County Health and Human Services will be there. So and different vendors from Washoe and Reno as well. So it's going to be a fairly widely represented event.
Great. Thank you.
Wonderful. It's nice to see something held down there.
Yes. We're excited about it.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
All right. Do we have somebody from BCTC with us today? No. All right, we will, if they pop up, we can jump back to them. We'll move on to the comptroller's office. Comptroller McCain. Thank you, Jennifer. You see Jana with us today. How about the recorder's office?
Good morning. I have nothing to report today.
Thank you, Drew. Moving right along to the IT department.
Good morning, Commissioners. James Dean, Story County IT Director. Got a few items today. We're going to start with the website. We are still in kind of a transition mode. We went live last week and the migration was not as smooth as we had hoped, but we have an all hands on deck effort to get everything moved over. We're prioritizing the public facing offices. We've gotten lots of good feedback from internal staff and as well as the public. So keep it coming and we'll get those things ironed out relatively quickly. I think the fresh coat of paint looks great. It's gonna have more features, but we got a little bit more work to do and we're prioritizing that to make that happen quickly. Next item I have is working some cloud projects with the comptroller's office, moving Tyler to the cloud. And also with Drew in the recorder's office, she has a Tyler product that we're going to be moving to the cloud. So that's exciting because it allows us to not have to house as many servers in-house and saves us money on power and hardware and service contracts and things like that. Been working with Jim Hindle. He just did the JAVS upgrade in the courthouse, which you're using now and appears to be working great. I noticed the camera quality is better in there. So nice job, Jim. We have all of our hardware mounted in Switch, and we're just waiting for a couple of long power cables so we can get that turned on and inspected by Switch. We expect to have the Switch project completed by the end of the month. So we're excited about that. And then finally, I'm working with Stacy York at the Senior Center to get that building put on the county's main network backbone, get her off the DSL line, get her some faster internet, some better internet services for the seniors, and give us some more redundancy in town. And that's all I have today. Thank you.
Thank you for that wonderful report, James. All great news. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for James?
No, thank you, James.
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
No questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you again, James.
Thank you, Commissioner.
For the hard work. Moving on to Human Resources.
Good morning, Jeannie Green. I have nothing to report. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeannie. Moving on to Community Development. I think we saw Pete with us today.
Yes, Commissioner, I'm with you today. I had a dental appointment yesterday. Pete Renault for the record. Just a couple of items. We're going to start doing a boardwalk, kind of repair inspection. So we have some new flyers that we want to drop off to the merchants down there. Also, I'm going to try to get the VCTC to help us kind of get this sent out to the merchants. Boardwalk's looking pretty shabby in a lot of places. Needs a lot of repair. Secondly, we had another resident drill a second well. And as far as I know, he did not hit water. And that's in the Castle Peak area. It's kind of surprising because it's a drainage back there. And he went 1,000-something feet and didn't hit water. And last time I talked to him there at 300 foot, was starting to hit some gray stuff, but it wasn't looking good financially for him. And that's about all I have for today.
Thank you very much, Pete. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Pete?
I do not, thank you.
All right, Vice Chairman Mitchell?
No, thank you.
All right, thanks again for that report, Pete. Much appreciated. Moving on to the Senior Center, Stacy York.
Good morning, Stacy York for the record. Tomorrow, we have a little bit of a busy day at the VC Senior Center. We are having a blood drive in remembrance of Edna Rosso, and that is from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. We are also doing COVID boosters at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. As Honey mentioned, on November 9th, we are doing a resource fair. It's at the Mark Twain Community Center from noon to 6 p.m. We will also be doing a flu shot COVID booster clinic during that same time. And we do have rides available. So if Lockwood people would like to go to Mark Twain, call Tony at the Senior Center there in Lockwood. And if they need a ride from VC down to Mark Twain, call Sarah at the VC Senior Center. And we're also doing a flu COVID clinic in Lockwood Thursday, November 17th, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. And a Highlands flu shot COVID Wednesday, November 30th, 4:30 to 6:30. And that is all I have.
Wonderful. Thank you, Stacy. Commissioner Gilman, you have any questions for Stacy?
No questions. Thank you.
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
No, thank you.
All right. Thanks again for that update, Stacy. I see that we have Judge Harrington with us today. Did you have anything for us?
I'm here. I will be addressing the judge.
All right. Thank you. How about the DA's office?
Keith Loomis, just briefly, I want to update you on the Nevada Energy case. Judge Wilson entered an order authorizing Nevada Energy to go ahead and occupy the property and begin their construction prior to the eminent domain action being completed. Massachusetts Land Acquisition is filing a writ with the Nevada Supreme Court to challenge that. We'll see what happens.
All right. Thank you for that update, Keith. Moving on to the county manager's office.
Nothing today, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Yay.
That must be a record. Somebody else was excited too. Yeah.
Very glad to see you.
Wow.
Yeah, impact.
Yeah. We got a fan club. Last but not least, our trusty clerk treasurer. What do you have for us today, Mr. Engel?
Thank you, Commissioners. Jim Hindle, County Clerk Treasurer, for the record. Just want to remind everybody, probably not missing it, that early voting is in process. We've had good turnout so far. We had two Saturdays in Lockwood as well as here in Virginia City. And we continue to have early voting here in Virginia City in the Slammer through the balance of this week. And it will conclude at 6 p.m. on Friday. That means that General Election Day is coming up next Tuesday. And we will have polling sites as usual here in the Slammer, in Virginia City Highlands at the fire station, Lockwood at the fire station, and Mark Twain at the community center. One of the things that we learned in the primary, as people will remember, is that when we finish voting here in Story County, there is a sequester through the Secretary of State on the release of results until all polling locations in the state are closed and have processed all voters. So as we saw back in the primary, that delayed our ability to release county results. But I just want to make everybody aware, and we'll try and put this out through social media so that the public is aware that the delay between the close of polls in Story County, and hopefully we will have another efficient polling process here, and that close and the delay to the release of county results is nothing more than the hold on results announcements by the Secretary of State until all polls across the state have processed all voters. So polls close at 7 on Election Day. We could have a delay up to a couple hours, as we saw, especially if there is weather in certain parts of the state that demand that polls stay open later. So just be aware of that. It's nothing more than we're waiting for polls to close and the legal ability to release the results for the county. I will also say that we've had some feedback that mail ballots must be presented and surrendered in order to vote in person through early voting or on Election Day. That is incorrect. Anybody may vote in person as a registered voter in the county. You do not need to bring your mail-in ballot. If you choose, you may and surrender it. But just want to remind everybody that that ballot is a live ballot, so make sure it's in your control if you don't surrender it at the polling place. Another thing with mail-in ballots, with paper ballots, want to make everybody aware and help people understand that the world has changed with the ability to report results. So mail-in ballots must be postmarked if you are mailing them to be cast and counted by the close of the post office on Election Day. And if it is postmarked as of November 8th, it has up until Saturday the 12th to arrive to the clerk's office and be cast and counted. But it must be postmarked. Anybody walking in to surrender or cast their ballot with us after November 8th, that ballot will not be accepted as an actual vote. So that, again, delays our overall tally and reporting of votes until after Saturday the 12th. Based on mail-in ballots having some discrepancy, we have the ability to cure a ballot, contact the voter, get them to either confirm signature or some detail up to the close of business on Monday the 14th. We will then process all final ballots that evening of the 14th, and we will have a final result for canvass by you, the Board of Commissioners, if all goes correctly, on Tuesday the 15th. If something has some glitch where we have to process ballots a little bit differently, we may call for a special meeting because the canvass must be done by Friday, the 18th, close of business. I just want to make everybody aware of those schedules with mail-in ballots, with the new process. We want everybody to understand how the process can be handled. We want everybody to be confident in the way that we're conducting this poll. I want to give credit to Deputy Clerk Heather Faircloth for her managing of all this process with our poll workers, with getting everything set up. She and our other deputy clerks, Rebecca Livingston, Alicia Duke, have done a wonderful job in managing this, and I want you to make sure that they are recognized. Any questions?
Thank you very much for that detailed report. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for our clerk?
I do not. Thank you, Jim.
Vice Chairman Mitchell.
Regarding the reporting of results, has there been any discussion about giving counties the flexibility to report county office results only from the Secretary of State's office, or are they not open to that idea?
The county has been given the latitude to announce results once all polls close for county offices only. But even for county offices, until polls close statewide, because of the concern that even with the announcement of county results, with some of that trend of just turnout, et cetera, it may cause people not to, not to finish their vote if they're standing in line. Because we do know that in both Washoe County, Clark County in particular, polls close at 7, but if you are in line, you get to vote. And that line can be quite long with people that have shown up and are still waiting to process.
Well, and in the past, I believe Clark County has allowed the line to continue to grow as long as there was a line, which potentially pushes it even later.
We will not do that in Story County. Okay. You must be in line by 7 o'clock on November 8th in order to cast your ballot.
Great. Thank you.
I have no questions for you, Jim, but I do appreciate the update. Appreciate you and your staff's hard work. Thank you. All right, that will conclude staff reports. We're going to get back to our regularly scheduled agenda. Moving right along to item number 7, which is board comment. I'm going to start off with Commissioner Gilman. Commissioner Gilman, do you have anything for us today?
Nothing today, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
All right. Vice Chairman Mitchell.
My only comment is just a plug, and that is we've got a great event coming up at the 4th Ward School. It's a worthy local organization, and my wife and I will be teaching a swing dance lesson, and there'll be a live band that's playing. And so if you want to come out, that's on Friday the 11th in the evening, and tickets are available online for that.
All right. Thank you for that. Those that know what has been a local, a recent trend for me, I've announced folks that have recently passed. I've not been made aware of anybody that has passed in the last 2 weeks. So that is fantastic news for Story County. And that's all I have today. So we will move right along to item number 8, which is discussion for possible action. Consideration of possible approval and authorizing the board chair to sign a memorandum of understanding between Story County and the Comstock Cemetery Foundation, establishing terms, conditions, and responsibilities for modern burials within and to promote preservation, protection, and management of these Silver Terrace cemeteries, including approximately 65 acres of historic cemetery lands located in Virginia City and the Gold Hill Cemetery located in Gold Hill, Story County, Nevada, and other properly related matters. County Manager.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Austin Osborne, County Manager, for the record. First, I just want to say is before I talk about what we're here for, we have some guests with us from the Comstock Cemetery Foundation. Judy Allen over to the left, right next to Jim Clark and Cal Dillon. And Candace Wheeler, the leader of the CCF, the general manager, is not able to make it. She could be on the Zoom meeting. However, I would like to ask at some point during this presentation that these folks are able to come up and maybe talk about some of the things they do in our cemetery. So really what you have in front of you is a memorandum of understanding for a very complex situation involving many different things. For decades, there have been interesting situations at our cemetery, some of them quite noteworthy, and that have gone back for quite some time. And so for the last 3 years or so, The foundation and the county have had an interest mutually to make some corrections on operations, burials, historic preservation, and other activities at the Silver Terror cemeteries. That conversation then has continued even to other cemeteries on the Comstock and Story County. Really, the discussions were about burial systems for modern burials, as well as preserving past burials, funding the cemetery, space needed for expansions in the future for the cemetery for future Story County residents, and also the multitude of different jurisdictions that apply to this property, including different cemeteries that are under different jurisdictions, different land holdings, mining claims, anything you can imagine. It's a typical Comstock situation. For the last 2 years, the following all came together to put this MOU together. And all these people and all these groups should really be commended for the hard work and dedication and expertise they brought to the table. Story County, the Comstock Cemetery Foundation, Hugh Ray Marshall and his representative company, Con Virginia Mining Company, Candace Wheeler from the Comstock Cemetery Foundation, and the Board of Commissioners of the Comstock Cemetery Foundation. The District Attorney's Office, including Ann and Keith, have been instrumental in helping us put this together, as well as Hugh Roy Marshall's attorney, who has also been participatory throughout this process. Almost all of our county department heads have been involved in this, whether it's land, it's roads, it's utilities, it's land ownership, maps, legal descriptions. All of the different elements involved in this have been involved. In all of the county elected offices as well. The recorder's office, for example, has been wonderful. Both Drew and Marty in digging up documents that go back to the 1800s that have helped us to figure out land ownership, boundaries in other jurisdiction that allows us to figure out how to apply this MOU to the existing conditions in that area. So what this MOU is addresses really the following things is modern burials in accordance with county mandated Nevada revised statutes that we have to maintain a cemetery. Expanding the space. We're running out of space. There's roughly 37 or so left that were full. This is going to create expansion for the future burials. Restoration and preservation of the cemetery that the Comstock Foundation or Cemetery Foundation has done such a stellar job at. This will not only allow that to occur, but also to be funded and managed and be able to give them the structure needed to assure that in the future, their works are going to continue to be appreciated, funded, and be useful in that area. Operations, everything from accounting to records to death certificates, and all the elements that are involved in operating a company, this in case being a cemetery, and then the funding. All of this is happening on land with countless issues, mining claims, overlapping ownerships, different jurisdictions I talked about earlier, et cetera. This is the MOU that will allow this to happen. And I think the best thing that we have about this is instead of having just public works or the county do burials and the county cemetery portion of this, this is going to take that role and put it into the experts, people like Cal that spend their entire lives doing nothing but cemetery work. He understands preservation, he understands the restoration, but he also understands the proper methods of burials and making sure everything is done for and accounted properly, not only now, but into the future. And this is for 99 years. And the reason it's 99 years is Hugh Ray Marshall has provided a blanket lease on the property upon which the MOU will rest. And then this will apply to the Silver Terrace cemeteries, as well as the Gold Hill Cemetery, because of the federal lands bill that we got the lands, we now have ownership of that cemetery. And there are opener clauses in this to apply to other cemeteries, such as the New Catholic Cemetery in Gold Hill, the Jewish Cemetery, and others that are throughout the Comstock, that once they get clouded ownership, federal ownership, whatever other things result, will be able to be considered for this MOU. The last thing I'll mention is there is a contingency on section 6 of this. The MOU allows a survey of two mining claims to occur at county cost. It's roughly $36,000. The reason for that is because it has all the ownership and the prior ownership and the overlapping mining claims have to be surveyed. We have a surveyor that we've reached out to as an expert in these sorts of matters, especially on the Comstock. He's with Loomis and Associates. This MOU will allow us to proceed forward on that. Once that survey is completed, then we can go, and this MOU will apply to those lands for the county expansion area and also for the Huey Marshall family plot area. That's all I have. I'm happy to answer any questions. In front of you is the MOU and the attached maps. And I remind us, our guests here today that may have words.
Thank you, County Manager Osborne. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Austin?
I do not have questions. Thank you.
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
Nor do I.
All right. Again, thank you. I'd like at this point to invite anybody from the Cemetery Foundation if they'd like to come up and speak or show us pictures or. Sell us some spaces.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner, and all you commissioners. My name is James Clark, 535 D Street in Virginia City. I'm a 12-year member of the Comstock Foundation Board, and I represent the Masonic section of the cemetery. I just want to put it in the term of being the doubting Thomas to begin with, probably 3 years ago when all this started, because we felt, gee, we've been there 20 years and we've gotten along, and you know, without the county's help. But I want you to know that I also found out the deficiencies that we had that to me really bothered me. In some cases, it was insurance. It had to do, in many cases, with roads. It had to do with ownerships. It had to do with a variety of things that when Austin would attend our meetings, he was excellent in answering my questions. And I know that I probably asked more than the rest of the members combined. And he did an excellent job. He has convinced me 100% that this needs to pass. This memorandum of understanding is a benefit more to our foundation than to anybody. I urge your passage. Our leader, our executive director, Candace, our members sitting with me over there, Cal and Judy, we've all taken a vote. It's been unanimous. Every single issue that we had, and boy, I've had some big ones, and I've really beat up Austin over it, and he's answered every single one, and it's come back. It's taken this 3 years to be able to rewrite it and continue to refine it to get to this point. I don't want it to go any farther. I want to see it approved. It's of advantage now to both of us. The other thing I want to mention is yesterday, in case you didn't know, myself and Joe Curtis, who's also a member of our board, we went to the high school and gave a $300 donation to the class that came up with the name for the new section that Hugh Roy Marshall had donated, and it's called Silver Fields. That was the winning name. So it's pretty much new news, and I'd like you to know that. But gentlemen, I thank you, and I especially thank your manager for the amount of effort. I mean, 3 years to put up with me and Candace and the rest of our group. You've done a fine job. I urge your passage. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Is there anybody else from the Cemetery Foundation that would like to come up and speak? Maybe in person or on Zoom? All right. Not seeing anybody. Is there any public comment regarding item number 8 in this memorandum of understanding? Not seeing any. I will look over to my left. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion to pass this memorandum?
Sure. I'd be happy to do that. Let me just find it again. Mm-hmm. There we go. I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve the Memorandum of Understanding and authorize the board chair to sign the Memorandum of Understanding between Story County and the Comstock Cemetery Foundation, establishing terms, conditions, and responsibilities for modern burials within and to promote preservation, protection, and management of the Silver Terrace cemeteries, including approximately 65 acres of historic cemetery land located in Virginia City, and the Gold Hill Cemetery located in Gold Hill, Story County, Nevada, and other properly related matters. The MOU becoming effective is contingent on certain required lease agreements and deed actions between the parties.
I'll second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you again for your work on this. Thank you for your work on this. Much appreciated. Moving right along to item number 9, this is discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval, George Robinson, Executive Director of the Truckee River Flood Management Authority, has requested a letter of support from Story County regarding the Truckee River Flood Management Authority's efforts on remapping the Truckee River floodplain along the Story County boundary. Kathy.
Yes, good morning. Kathy Canfield for the record. Mr. Robison is here today to give a brief presentation of the work that the Truckee River Flood Management Agency has been doing and working on remapping the Truckee River from West Reno to Wadsworth. Staff has had a chance to look this over, and we are in support of providing a letter of support for the project. I personally, as staff, have had issues with where some of the mapping is. It's incorrectly done on the FEMA maps. At this point, they've finished their review of the mapping, and they're getting ready to submit this to FEMA. And FEMA likes to have letters of support from the local jurisdictions. So I can have George come up and give you a brief presentation of the work that they've been doing. And we've also provided for you a letter of support to consider for.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thanks.
Mr. Robison, I believe I butchered your last name. Sorry about that.
Oh, don't worry about it. Everybody butchers it.
Yes, I'm Robison.
I am, for the record, George Robison. I'm the executive director of the Truckee River Flood Management Authority. The authority, just for the record, is a founded authority that's an agreement between Reno, Sparks, and Washoe County, and is funded by a 1/8 cent sales tax in Washoe County. This particular project was started in 2019, March of 2019, passed by the Technical Advisory Committee, and then our board, which consists of city and county officials. This has been going on for 3 years. And the reason we took this on is because the existing maps date back to 1984, and a lot of the information that was used to build the maps was from even the 1970s. As Kathy mentioned, there are places where the river was out of alignment. There are places where the topography was off and things like that. The modern rendition of this uses the most up-to-date terrain and the most up-to-date modeling techniques to get this more accurately. There, most places, there are not much of a difference between the old mapping. There are a few places where there are very big differences because, for instance, the river was out of alignment in the old mapping. So we are asking for a letter of support. The letter of support is basically a letter just saying we're aware of this, we know about it, we've been involved, we generally support this, but it reserves your right that if you have a problem with a particular place being mapped incorrectly on the new maps, you can comment on that in the process going forward with FEMA. So it doesn't get rid of that. It just says that you're in general support of getting these maps updated. So with that, I'll answer any questions that you have, and that's really all that I had for today.
All right, thank you, Mr. Robison. I'll start off with Commissioner Gilman. Do you have any questions for George?
I have no questions. I'm grateful that this project is going forward. I think it'll be beneficial for all of us to have a clean look at the river corridor. So I'm certainly in support of this project.
All right, thank you, Lance. Vice Chairman Mitchell, anything?
I don't have any questions. I'm supportive as well.
All right, I don't have any questions either. I appreciate you taking the time to come up here and give us your explanation of what's been going on.
All right, thank you.
With that said, is there any public comment regarding this item? Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman Mitchell.
I just wanted to add to that, sure. The Technical Advisory Committee that Mr. Robison mentioned, Story County does have a member on that, and Mr. Gilman is the member, and I act as his alternate to that. So we do participate in that.
Wonderful. Thank you. Vice Chairman Mitchell, care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, I see two recommended motions here. They look to be the same, just duplicates of the same thing.
I think they were duplicates is what I saw.
Okay.
That was my take at least.
All right. Then I will go ahead with the first, the second one. I'll go with the second one.
Yeah. Somebody was happy copy and pasting maybe.
I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to submit a letter of support for the remapping efforts by the Truckee River Flood Management Authority for the Truckee River between West Reno and Wadsworth, Nevada, to the Federal Emergency Management Agency.
I'll second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Commissioner Gilman. Thank you, Mr. Robeson, for all your effort on this. All right. Moving on to item number 10, this is discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of Story County Proclamation for Flood Awareness Week, November 13th through the 19th of 2022. Kathy?
Yes, so this is something that Story County has participated in within last 4 years or so. And I have Aaron Warnock, who is the state floodplain manager, is here also today. This is something that Story County participates with the state's efforts to provide flood information out to the public. There's a website that's nevadafloods.org that has a lot of good information. During this week, there's some events that are occurring in Carson City. And in Story County, we have an event scheduled at Hillside Elementary School, where we have the State Division of Water Resource staff, along with Army Corps, are going to be presenting to the elementary school students. They have some activities and some different things that they'll be doing for that. We do this also because it helps with our National Flood Insurance Program, Community Rating Systems program that we're also involved with. So staff is recommending that we go ahead and adopt this. And I have Aaron here to receive this if you so choose to do so.
Wonderful. Thank you, Kathy. Does Aaron have anything to say before I check with my fellow commissioners?
Hi, everyone. Aaron Warnock for the record, State of Nevada, State Floodplain Manager and NFIP Coordinator. We would just like to thank Story County in the past for issuing a proclamation and encourage you to do it again for all of the reasons that Kathy listed. And we appreciate all of the active participation from your floodplain manager, Kathy Canfield, and all of the good work that Story County does for floodplain management. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for either Kathy or Aaron?
No questions. Thank you.
All right. Vice Chairman Mitchell?
I don't have any questions either. Thank you.
All right. And I don't have any questions either, but I do thank you for being here. We'll go to public comment. Is there any public comment about this proclamation? No one's against proclaiming National Flood Week, Story County Flood Week. All right. So with that said, Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion? And I'll have the proclamation read before we second.
Yes, I'm happy to do that. And I make a motion for Flood Awareness Week. I don't necessarily want that week to be Story County Flood Week.
My bad. Yeah, no worries. Probably a good idea.
But we don't jinx ourselves.
But we are ready.
I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve Story County, Nevada proclamation for recognizing Flood Awareness Week, November 13th through 19th of 2022.
All second. Right. Before we second that, would we care to read the proclamation, please?
Sure.
Whereas Story County recognizes the significant threat that flooding poses to our residents, our businesses, the community, the region, and our local economy. And whereas Story County has experienced flood events from the Truckee River, weather events, and flooding of local streams, channels, and creeks. And whereas risks can be reduced and communities can be prepared to be more aware and resilient by educating residents and businesses on actions they can take to prepare for flood events. And whereas during Flood Awareness Week, local, state, and federal agencies are working together across Nevada to inform the public about the dangers of flooding, how to protect their homes and families and businesses from a flood event, and plan for recovery. Now, therefore, the Story County Board of County Commissioners does hereby proclaim November 13th through November 19th as Nevada Flood Awareness Week, and urges all citizens to increase their awareness of the risks of floods by visiting www.nevadafloods.org and learn how you can be prepared.
Thank you for that, Kathy. So there's a motion. Do we have a second on that motion?
A second, yes, thank you.
All right, so there's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Again, thank you for being here. Oh, we're gonna do a picture? Yep, award and a picture. My apologies.
Okay.
Are you gonna join us?
Yeah.
Signed, sealed, and delivered.
This all is a little funky. Where you move is kind of moving.
Actually, okay, come in a little bit more. Perfect.
All right.
One, two, three, more. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that's yours.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you again. Thank you. All right, let's move on to item number 11. This is discussion. No action will be taken. This is first quarter budget to actual review for fiscal year 2022 to 2023. Comptroller McCain.
Good morning, Jennifer McCain, Story County Comptroller for the record. For our first quarter financial review for Story County General Fund and all other special funds, the revenues overall all were at the expected level or better. This is mostly due to the ad valorem that comes in heavier in the first couple quarters. Overall, our revenues are at 40% at 25% of the year behind us. That's a little bit lower than last year. Last year at this point in time, it was at 45%. Again, the major draw of this is the ad valorem, which is collected currently during the first quarter at 41%, which is 7% under last year. Not really sure why this is happening, but I have looked back over the past years, and there's always a little bit of flux between years. It's also important to note that under the licensing and permit section, the general fund does look far above the curve at 75% collected, according to what was budgeted. However, portions of this still need to be reclassed in a journal entry to the fire district after the recent MOU agreement that was signed. As far as the expenses go, at the end of the first quarter, the general fund expenses overall are at 20% expended, with including the first quarter transfers. Without these transfers, we're approximately at 15%. I am working on a way to account for these transfers where they're not included in the revenues and expenses, because I think moving money between funds is not really a revenue or expense, and it kind of skews the overall totals. Countywide, most departments are at or slightly better the 25 expected percentage of usage. A further breakdown in the general fund departments expenses. Some specifics that I want to mention are under salaries and benefits. We did expect to see a slight overage due to the fact that the AFSCME CBA was not finalized until June, and the budget was completed before that. We do see that some departments are going to be over 2 to 5%, and we are aware of it, watching that, and if necessary, the departments that are necessary will be augmented at the end of the year. Also noted in our 24/7 departments, overtime is trending to be over budget. This is also normal for this time of year, as most of our special events require more deputies, more dispatchers, those kind of things on the round the clock. So we do anticipate this evening out, a little bit as the year goes on. So under supplies and services section, all departments are continuing to spend conservatively in this area, which we definitely appreciate in our office. However, there are a few line items that are currently over budget. This is primarily due to one-time annual costs included in dues and subscriptions, computer purchases that are usually made at the beginning of the fiscal year, and maintenance agreements. There are a few areas that we are watching very closely where we had some unbudgeted expenses come up. One of those is building maintenance under buildings and grounds. This year we had two fairly large maintenance things come up that we were not aware we were gonna have to take care of. One of those is changing the oil in the elevator in the courthouse, which apparently has to happen every 10 years. Who knew? But we're glad that we have Otis Elevator to tell us when we're supposed to do it. We would have liked a little advance notice. We didn't get it, but we felt it was better and prudent to take care of that way we're being told rather than wait and have something happen to the elevator. As well, an issue that will be talked about in more depth at a later item that we have to watch are the sprinkler systems in the jail and the Gold Hill Depot. Apparently we needed to drain and upgrade the antifreeze in these systems. So if you approve that, that will also be an out of budget item that has to be done, especially with all the fires of historic buildings that have come up recently. We want to make sure those are protected. Gas and fuel prices is another area of concern that we are paying close attention to. And during the budgets, we did prepare for increasing fuel costs. I just don't think we were thinking that things were going to go and become quite as volatile as they are. Really watching, and I did talk a little bit to Jason Wersbisky yesterday about the possible diesel shortage that's going to cause us a big problem, and really make sure that our tanks are filled at closer intervals, making sure that we're not letting things go down so that if that does come about, we at least have some reserves. Another area that we're watching is auto maintenance. Partially due to the increasing costs of parts, also due to the need to upkeep older vehicles because of the lack of supply in newer vehicles. We did do some transferring of vehicles. Austin's office took control over some over vehicles as they don't drive them very often. Therefore, upkeeping those vehicles that maybe we would have gotten rid of in cost more money. So in capital outlay section, we did have a significant unbudgeted purchase this quarter. Communications had purchased a backup recorder last fiscal year. Unfortunately, this invoice didn't come to us until the current fiscal year. And of course we had to pay it. So Becky is watching her budget closely to hopefully avoid the need for an augmentation, but it is on our radar as a possible augmentation. Some fund highlights include emergency mitigation. In the revenue section, you'll see that we have received our second payment from the ARPA funds in the amount of $400,422, which bring our total amount of ARPA funds to $800,844. These funds will be used in part to help with the upgrades to the water infrastructure. And this definitely falls in line with the strict guidelines to how we can spend that money. Let's see, where am I? capital projects. An unbudgeted opportunity did come available to us a year earlier than we had expected. This is the movement of IT backups to the switch area and try. This resulted in some unbudgeted purchases, and James Dean is aware that these are unbudgeted. He is working very closely to see what kind of items he can push into the next fiscal year, if possible. With that all being said, it's a little bit too early for our capital projects fund to tell how over budget we will be. I do want to note on the VCTC that their revenues are collected currently at 35% of their budget. This is, again, mainly due to the special events being front-loaded in our fiscal year. Their salaries are currently at 40% usage, with 25% of the year having passed. This partially goes to the event season and other issues and some changes that are happening within that fund as far as their staffing goes. We're hoping now that things are settling down that we will be able to get a more regulated number and see where we're going to have to augment, if anything. However, on a good note, their service and supplies is at 17% of usage. But that is with some events recently being untallied. So I am happy to say that budgetarily we are looking very good and on solid ground. Looking towards the second quarter, I would like to hope that the department heads continue to spend conservatively and that the revenues come in as budgeted. Unfortunately, as we all know and hear on every platform around us, the world is kind of going crazy right now. We're not really sure what direction we're going, but we are seeing an increase in prices, so we need to continue to watch for that. But I think we are in a good position to handle any wave that comes our way. I also want to note that I think spending conservatively is great, and I will always be an advocate of that. But there comes a point that if we're spending so conservatively that we cannot fulfill our responsibilities to the public, then we're not being good stewards of their money. So there is definitely a fine balance there. So on that note, I would like to also say that we are moving forward, as Mike Northern talked about, on some of our very large CIP projects, including the Lockwood Community Center, the VCH Fire Bays, and the Lockwood Substation. So we are going to see a significant change in the next couple quarters of how our spending is going. That's why we have that money, is to provide these services. I'd also like to note that all of these first quarter numbers will be on our website next week under our Story County Financial Transparency section. Just go to the comptroller's page and you can see it there. Unless you have any questions for me, I'm finished.
Wonderful. Thank you for that detailed report, Jennifer. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Comptroller McCain?
I do not have questions. Thank you for the report.
All right, Vice Chairman Mitchell.
I don't have any questions either. Thank you. It's a good report.
All right, thank you. I'm just going to take public comment. Is there any public comment regarding the budget finances that were talked about today? All right, not seeing any. Thank you again for that report.
See you in a little bit.
Okay. Moving right along to item number 12, this is a discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible first reading of ordinance 22-323, an ordinance incorporating civil infractions under Nevada revised statutes as violations of the Story County Code, also known as the SCC, reducing certain existing provisions of the SCC as they affect traffic and parking regulations from misdemeanors to civil infractions. The purpose of this ordinance is to implement some of the provisions from AB 116 from the 2021 legislative season, which reduced numerous misdemeanors to civil infractions. Deputy DA Loomis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. As is stated in the summary, in the last legislative session, the
legislature passed AB 116, which is a provision that changed a lot of the state misdemeanor violations, specifically in areas involving traffic violations and motorcycles and even some off-road vehicle issues, from misdemeanors to civil infractions, which have a maximum punishment of a $500 fine. This request for the ordinance came from the Justice Court, and the attorney is here, and I think she's prepared to address some of this.
Good morning, Judge.
Good morning, Commissioners. Judge Harrington for the record. First of all, I'd like to thank the District Attorney's Office, District Attorney Ann Langer, and Chief Deputy District Attorney Keith Loomis for helping put this ordinance together. What this stems from, as he already said, was Assembly Bill 116, which was passed, put in motion a change of what's now traffic misdemeanors. Many of them are being changed to civil infractions. And we've been working closely with the Department of Public Safety in creating NOC codes. They're Nevada offense codes that go with every single violation in every single county. So Story County will have a different NOC code for a violation than another county. So there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of NOC codes. Now, we've been working on that. The DPS eventually notified my court that they had created specific NOC codes for our county. To activate those NOC codes, we have to amend our ordinances to reflect the adoption of the civil infractions. What this allows then is for when there's a civil infraction, the fines will go to the county. Without adoption of this ordinance, those fines will go to the state. Currently, our fines on traffic infractions, or whether they're misdemeanor or become civil, go to the county, with the exception of registration and driver's license violations. A few years back, that was all changed, so all of those fines go to the state permanent school fund. So take out the registration, driver's license, those all remain misdemeanors. But when you get into the rules of the road, which encompass most of your traffic violations, the majority of those violations are being amended to a civil infraction. That doesn't necessarily mean a reduced fine. In fact, many of the civil infraction fines will be increased compared to what they were as misdemeanor violations. Does that make sense so far? So let's say something that was a misdemeanor violation, or this year, maybe had a $100 fine. The Judges Association, including me, we all got together and we had to set uniform civil fines. So something that may have been $100 will now be, on some of them, $300. So it doesn't necessarily affect the fines themselves, but without this ordinance, the civil fines will go directly to the state and not to the county. And we are not allowed, per the bill, I was asked this question, it specifically does not allow counties to enact any local ordinance to retain something as a misdemeanor or make something a misdemeanor that the state has now said is a civil infraction. Do you think I covered that? Do you have any questions? It's kind of complicated.
I'll wait my turn.
Pardon?
I know I do, but I'll wait my turn. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for the judge or Deputy DA Loomis?
I don't have questions at the moment. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Vice Chairman Mitchell.
Do I understand correctly that we have one particular section of the ordinance that's going the other direction, that unauthorized use of a handicapped space is actually becoming a misdemeanor?
Well, no, that's always, parking has always been a misdemeanor. All your parking violations, except for parking in the handicap zone, will become civil infractions. And basically what that means is if the person defaults, let's say they don't show up for, they're given 90 days on a civil infraction to either contest it, ask for a hearing, or pay it. They don't pay it. The only option now, I don't issue a warrant for, hey, you failed to appear. I send that to civil collections. So parking in the handicap zone is one of those things that remains a misdemeanor. And there's an entire schedule that I prepared mainly for the sheriff's office and my office that specifies what goes to civil and what remains misdemeanor. You can be stopped. Let's say you're driving along, you're stopped and you're going 20 miles over the speed limit, but you also have a suspended driver's license. That suspended driver's license will be treated as a misdemeanor by the court. It goes off on a different track. The driving at 20 miles per hour over the speed limit remains a civil. It goes on a different track. So when that officer stops you, he will be giving you two citations instead of one, and they go off on different tracks. One goes off on a criminal track, one goes off on a civil track. And as I said, we've been working ever since this was passed. We've been working in the office. We attend weekly workshops. I'm going to a training with one of my staff in December because there'll be a creation of a different case management system to handle these. So we'll be working with different management systems. It's pretty complex, but I believe my office is prepared to handle it. Any other questions?
Right, the legislature making things more complex at the local level, that would never happen, would it?
Oh, every day, and you know, every day. We
all just right, strike that one from the record. Just kidding.
No, we'll keep that on.
And after I attend that training in December, I'll probably come back in a meeting, you know, right around January and pretty much give a recap on how everything is flowing perfectly without problems.
I had one other question, and that, you know, there's a, by reference to NRS chapters, fairly broad about all, it says all traffic acts and civil violations defined within those sections. Can you give us an example of any, if there are any traffic related violations that would remain criminal?
Well, for example, I already covered the registration and driver's license, but following too closely remains a misdemeanor. But passing in a no passing is going to become civil. And failing to stop for a flagger will remain misdemeanor. And they, you'd think that they would follow what we call the demerits. Anybody who's ever had a ticket, you know, there's demerits. They go from one all the way up to, I believe, eight. So we thought, okay, so most of the four demerits would remain misdemeanor, but that isn't so. Many of the four demerit tickets went civil. Some of them remained misdemeanor.
Okay.
So it's and if any of the commissioners is interested in looking at the draft schedule that I prepared, I'd be happy. All you have to do is request it, and I'd be happy to.
Great, thank you. Yeah, I think that'd be helpful between this and the second reading. That'd be just to kind of see where it lays out.
Okay. But this ordinance is important because without this ordinance, those NOC codes that were prepared for our county would not be activated.
Any other questions, Vice Chairman?
I'm good. Thank you.
All right. I have one, hopefully easily answered. So for the layperson, I could then become a habitual speeder. And the worst scenario for me is that, assuming I have great credit, it's going to ruin my credit because I don't pay those fines, right? Is that my understanding?
Well,
correctly?
There is one of the sections in the bill that if you over a, I believe it's a 3 or 5 year period, get more than, I wish I had it here in front of me, more than I'd say 5 violations that were 4 demerit points or more. And that would be a combination of civil and misdemeanor. If you get more violations than what is allowed in that time period, the Department of Motor Vehicles will suspend your driver's license.
Okay, so we're not in then, a sense.
Excuse me, then sorry. I'm sorry. Then you're driving on a suspended driver's license, which becomes a misdemeanor, which is a criminal offense. But up to 29 miles per hour over the speed limit remains, it will be changed to a civil infraction, which becomes a civil judgment if you don't pay on it. And plus your insurance rates will go up.
Assuming I choose to have insurance.
And yes, which that's a good question or good comment, because we have many, many drivers, and I'm sure the sheriff is, you know, you pull them over. The normal thing is no insurance, no driver's license, and they're speeding. So that would, that's a problem. But some of those would be civil. Some of them would be misdemeanor. If you get stopped for a DUI, and you're also speeding, or you've done something civilly incorrect, the DA can choose to then, because it's a DUI, treat that civil infraction as a criminal in a complaint.
Okay.
Okay.
So it doesn't sound as lawless as, it's not as lawless as it sounds. I'll say that.
We will find out.
Oh, let's find out.
Okay.
Is lack of evidence of insurance, is that going to be civil?
Pardon? No insurance is still going to remain a misdemeanor, because that's a big problem.
It is. Okay. All right.
Anything else?
Okay. That finishes my questions. I'm going to go to the public comment now, in case we have any lawbreakers that are on Zoom or in the public that want to clarify this. Is there any public comment before we decide on this motion? Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to historically pass this motion?
Mr. Chairman?
I'd like to read the title.
Mr. Chairman? Jay?
Yes, Commissioner Gilman.
Yeah, if I may, I'm coming in just a tad bit late here, but I'm curious, in listening to the complexity that this appears to create, how is it going to... How are the officers out writing these citations? Is it going to complicate their lives significantly? I heard that maybe they're going to have to write more than one ticket, or they're going to have to separate tickets in the field. Or what happens to the officer that's actually out writing the citations?
Okay, well, the officers' lives are already very complicated. But what happens is they have a computer device. And I understand, at first I thought, oh, are they going to have two computer devices? But I understand it'll stay one. And when they input this information, oh, I stopped Mr. Smith on this, that will generate, you know, those long, anybody who's had a ticket, they're about 2 feet long. That'll generate a civil infraction with all the instructions for them on how to approach that civil infraction. And then you'll get another long ticket of what's the misdemeanor infraction. And I believe they're going to stay with one computer device. I don't think the officers are going to have to be carrying up two different computer devices, but it's going to complicate things. And as I said, the judges have been attending weekly meetings specifically addressing how this is going to come to our office and how people are going to be receiving these tickets.
It seems to me
that it'll complicate things.
It seems to me that it's really going to complicate the officer in the field life. And I suppose we can't really anticipate how that's going to roll out, but am I going to assume that the sheriff's departments have been included in these deliberations and coming up with the results that we're all looking at today? Have the sheriffs been involved and the impact of their officers?
I believe their offices have been involved with the training, if Sheriff Antonora wants to come up and address that for you.
Morning, Commissioner Gilman. Yes, we've been working on this for some time since the legislation has passed. We've worked with the courts. We're working with our software vendors, and they're updating the handheld computer devices that the judge alluded to, that we'll have all of those codes inputted into it. We've got the bail schedules from the court, so that whole structure is being inputted. It is going to be a difficulty making the transition, knowing which one is which and making sure they get the right code. But anytime you have a change, you're going to have those kind of difficulties. But the whole process is a bad process that started with the legislature turning these into civil infractions in the first place. But we have to deal with it. And we've been working on it for, well, getting close to 2 years now. So we're as ready as we can be.
It'll be very interesting to see how it impacts your field officers. But thanks for the follow-up. We don't need to complicate their lives any more than they are today and the decisions they have to make on the fly. But I do think it's unfortunate that they've created this morass for all of us. Thank you for the follow-up.
Thank you, Commissioner Gilman.
Any other questions?
I don't think so. We were at the motion part, I think, unless there was something. Oh, I think Keith wanted to say something.
In as much as this is the first reading, I require to read the title into the record.
Please do so.
This is the title to ordinance number 22-323 and provides an ordinance amending chapters 1 and 10 of the Story County Code to identify civil infractions under the Nevada Revised Statutes as civil infractions under the County Code, and providing that existing traffic and parking provisions of the County Code will be reduced from misdemeanors and treated as civil infractions, and establishing the penalty for infractions and other matters properly relating thereto.
Thank you, Deputy DA Loomis. Vice Chairman Mitchell, you care to entertain a motion?
I will make a motion. Before I make that motion, do I remember correctly that we took a position opposing AB 116 when that came up to the legislature, or did we not take an official position?
Let's put the county manager on the spot.
I believe our county did. The lobbyists reached out.
Okay, thank you. Under duress, I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve the first reading of Ordinance 22-323, an ordinance addressing infractions, authorizing the setting of a public hearing on the ordinance, and authorizing publication of a notice regarding the hearing.
And under duress, I will follow up and second your motion.
There are two motions made under duress. All those in favor, say aye.
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 The motion passes begrudgingly. Thank you. That's official, right? I can say that. That works. All right. Just wanted to be on the record. Thank you, Judge, for being here, and aside some of the humor, thank you. No problem. All right, moving on to item number 13, recess to convene as the Story County Fire Protection District Board. Bringing us to item number 14, which is discussion only. No possible action will be taken, or no action will be taken. These are first quarter budget to actual review for the fire district fiscal year 2022-2023. Comptroller McCain, accompanied by Chief Honkler.
Good morning again. Jennifer McCain, Story County Comptroller, for the record. This is the first quarter review for the fire district for fiscal year 22-23. With revenues are coming in at approximately 34% of the budgeted amount. This does not include the mutual aid transfer in, and it also does not include the business license fees that the fire district is entitled to with the recently signed MOU. That will be done shortly and will be reflected in the second quarter. As with Story County, the ad valorem is trending higher than the 25% collection rate at approximately 42%. Again, it's important to note that this is a front-loaded revenue, and we will see this evening out as the next three quarters proceed. Expenses in the Fire District General Fund are approximately at 26% usage. This does not include any of the transfers out from the Fire Fund. Salaries are approximately 29% of the budgeted amount. This is primarily due to the overtime coverage for backfilling the fire station for out-of-district fires and leave. This is a necessary overage as we cannot leave our fire stations at a reduced staffing level for the safety of our communities. Chief Longcar and I have been discussing this, and he's coming up with some ways that we can better budget for the overtime in the future, so we won't see these kind of overages. Service and supplies is approximately at 10% usage. We have a few line items that are over the 25% mark, even trending closer to 70 and 80%. These are related to one-time annual fees, one-time purchases, and fire season related items. Chief Longcar continues to spend very conservatively, which helps his fund balance grow to a more comfortable level. If you remember a year or even 2 years back, their fund balance was dipping dangerously low. So it's very important that we keep that rising and get to a place where, should something happen to our revenues, they still have a pot to dip into to keep all their services going. With that all being said, there are a significant number of line items that are still currently at 10% or less expended, and we expect to see these in the coming quarters as time moves on and things become more necessary to purchase. Mutual aid is a fund that tracks the expenses for the out-of-district fires. Expenses and revenues and currently these expenses are at 42% of the budget without any of the transfers out. And with the fire season coming to an end for this calendar year, this leaves us in a good position budgetarily for the beginning of the fire season in 2023. It is not uncommon that this fund be out of budget on expenses due to the fire season being primarily in the beginning of the fiscal year. However, this year, the first quarter of revenues is higher than the expenses, and this is due to final collections of last fiscal year's fires, excuse me. Billing for the current year out of district fires is just beginning, and we'll see, it will take some time for us to see those revenues come in. The first quarter review for the fire district can be a little messy with the fire season being in the beginning of the year. However, this year has not been the case. There's unfortunately not been much excitement on the expense side, and the revenues are tracking very well. At this time, I don't see any issues moving forward with this budget. Again, all of these numbers can be seen on the Story County website on the comptroller's page under financial transparency. If there's any questions.
Thank you, Comptroller McCain. Fire Chief, did you want to add anything before I went to questions?
No, just here, if any questions do come up, I can be a little more specific on those items.
Thank you. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for the comptroller?
I have no questions, thank you.
All right. Vice Chairman Mitchell, or excuse me, Fire Commissioner Mitchell, do you have any questions for the comptroller?
So I'm curious on the revenue side for the main 474 fire district budget, the license and permit amount is substantially higher than what we're expecting for the period, and I'm wondering if that's an indication of substantially more activity, or is there some sort of transfers and things going on that's not proportional?
That's primarily due to the permit revenue, not the business licenses. And I think we budgeted that very conservatively, not really knowing how this separation was going to shake out. So I'm not aware if this is first quarter issue or you're seeing more permits than normal.
No, again, Jeremy Longcar for the record. So on that, we are seeing, and I'm sure ComDev can attest to it as well, just increased number of building. However, Comptroller McCain is spot on that reverting back, we took very, very old data and use that in moving forward because we knew it was a conservative number.
Got it. Great. Thank you. Thank you. Well, you'll be happy to know that we took executive action and canceled the 2023 fire season, so we should be in good shape.
Perfect. Thank you.
Replace it with flood season.
Flood. I love the comedy show that's going on today. We should keep this going.
It'll be lighthearted. It's all serious business. All right. Thank you very much, Vice Chairman Mitchell. I don't have any questions for you, but I will go to the public, see if they have any questions about where their fire district money is going. Is there any public comment regarding the fire district budget, first quarter budget? Maybe they don't. So thank you both for taking the time to come up here. Thank you for the reports.
Right. Thank you so much.
And with that said, we're going to take a quick 10-minute recess. We will all be back in at 11:50.